Money FM 89.3, best of weekends. International News Review.
Joining us for International News Review, Steve Okun, Senior Advisor at McLarty Associates. Welcome back, Steve.
Good morning, GVZ. How are things in Tapayo?
Oh, well, sunny and beautiful as always. It is one of the garden spots here in Singapore, so you need to get over here. As soon as we can get the studio open, we'll get all of our guests back in the studio. That'll be nice, won't it?
I can't wait.
All right, Steve, lots to talk about today. Of course, front and center, I think, internationally is the U.S. Election cycle that's happening. Both President Trump and Joe Biden did separate town hall meetings this week, and then they were both out on the campaign trail, various places. You had an article earlier in the week in the Straits Times entitled Wind in Biden's Sails as November 3 Draws Near. Now, I assume that means that you believe that he has got an advantage at this point, or a stronger advantage.
Well, he has a huge advantage. I mean, if you look at any metric from a historical perspective on who's going to win in on election day, it's going to be Joe Biden over Donald Trump. You look at, you know, how badly Trump's approval ratings are. You look at how badly Americans think the country is going, especially when it comes to COVID. You look at all the polls where Biden's lead is 10 points nationally, and he's up in all the swing states. So, you know, all those indicators show that Biden should win. And what's holding people back is saying, well, yeah, but look at what happened in 2016, and everybody thought Hillary was going to win, and Trump ended up winning. And, you know, my response to that is it's not 2016. It's 2020. It's very different, and people need to keep that in mind.
There was something I read recently that I want to bring up, and although you in your article point to the different metrics, but there is this school of thought, or this idea that there may be a lot of people out there that aren't publicly saying that they support Trump, but they are perhaps one-issue voters. For example, their 401k has done particularly well, or they're against a woman's right to choose and would, you know, support Roe versus Wade, abortion laws being overturned. And so those groups are going to come out and actually vote for Trump, even though they may not be polling that way. Is there, from your perspective, is there credence to that argument?
I mean, there is, but the pollsters know that this time, and they're correcting their polls in two significant ways. One is that the theory is that the Trump voters are just less likely to respond to a poll if they just don't even want to answer a phone call or an email from a pollster, so they don't. So they're undercounted in the sample size. That happened in 2016, so pollsters are now taking that into account when they calculate what the actual vote is going to look like. The second thing is that there are a lot of Trump voters who aren't likely voters by definition. Normally, if you vote 3, 4, 5 times in a row, you're going to be presumed to vote the next time. And if you've only voted once in the last 5 elections, you're presumed not to vote. Well, Trump voters are extraordinarily passionate and enthusiastic for him. So they were undercounted as likely voters last time. The pollsters recognize this now. And so the polls should be even more accurate on those that one key demographic than they were last time, which is why I say it's 2020, not 2016. People have learned their lesson from 2016.
When we look at the numbers, as some of our listeners may know, it's the Electoral College that counts, not the popular vote. There are some major important states: Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Ohio, Florida. These are the ones that need to be controlled by whoever is going to win, in large part, whoever is going to win the election. What are the standings looking like in those states right now?
The thing for Joe Biden is he has a lot of paths to victory when it comes to getting his 270 plus votes in the Electoral College. Donald Trump's is very narrow. Donald Trump can't really get to 270 without winning Florida, because Donald Trump is going to lose New York and Illinois and California and Wisconsin, and not necessarily Wisconsin, and Washington and Oregon. And so Trump has to win those swing states much more so than Joe Biden does. And Florida is probably the most critical state for Donald Trump. And he's in trouble in Florida, because Florida has more senior voters than almost anywhere else by proportion. Mm. And seniors aren't happy with Donald Trump, right? They're the ones who are bearing the brunt of the fatalities when it comes to COVID. And they're also the ones who have to isolate more than anybody else. They don't get to see their families. They don't see their grandkids. And so seniors is the biggest swing in a demographic going away from Trump, and that's going to hurt him in Florida. And if he loses Florida, there's almost no chance for him to win the Electoral College.
What are we expecting now? They had two very different town hall meetings. I noticed that according to the actual numbers, the ratings, that Biden did better by a million or two over Trump in terms of viewership on those two different town halls they had. Was that an important moment for either of them? Or at this point, do people pretty much know what these guys stand for? And you know, decisions have been made as to who people are going to vote for.
Well, I think this is where Donald Trump made a huge tactical mistake in turning down that head-to-head debate with Joe Biden, because it was going to be remote. And Donald Trump desperately needs to change the narrative arc of this campaign. Right now, it's a referendum on his first term and where the economy is, where COVID is, where civil unrest is. He's going to lose. So he needs to change it from a referendum to a choice between him and Biden. He needs to make the case, I'm the one who's going to ensure there's law and order in the country. I'm the one who's the better steward for the economy when we get past COVID. He couldn't do that because he was you know, going back and forth with the moderator more than with Joe Biden in this town hall. So it was a big mistake for him. He's running out of time. The next debate is going to be the most critical day for him between now and Election Day.
Steve, there was an interesting controversy that came up. Twitter and Facebook stumbled unwittingly into a row by blocking links to a New York Post article on Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son, and his activities in Ukraine. The article was basically that, you know, implicating Joe Biden in some wrongdoing in Ukraine. Tell us a little bit about what happened there.
Well, basically what happened was the story is that an inebriated Hunter Biden shows up at a computer repair shop in Delaware, drops off a laptop while he's inebriated, signs over the rights to the laptop to the owner, says, if I don't come and get this in 90 days, it becomes your property. Somehow he forgets about this laptop.
Oh.
The laptop then becomes into the possession of the owner, who then opens it up thinking he might have some crimes that were committed, the evidence on the laptop. He then turns it over to Rudy Giuliani, who then takes the laptop to the New York Post.
Guess.
Exactly. And so basically what now the New York Post runs the story. Twitter and Facebook say, well, look, this is a completely unsubstantiated, that all of a sudden these emails in which Hunter Biden is emailing his father, and the emails pop up 2 weeks before the election that show corruption within the Obama administration and Joe Biden as vice president. This is totally unsubstantiated. We're not going to allow this on our platform.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they block it. And then all the, you know, a lot of conservatives say, well, this is a violation of the First Amendment. And so this is the balancing act we have in the United States right now, where someone like the New York Post has the right to publish it under the First Amendment, although Hunter Biden could potentially sue for defamation, given and liable, given that it's that he's a private citizen, and Twitter and Facebook say, well, this is, you know, fake news. We're going to block it, but it gets to be extraordinarily political, and you know, the Singapore has, you know, its system here, the, you know, the protection from online falsehoods and manipulation at
PAFMA,
which can block fake news, then the government can order to take it down. That's not the system we have in the U.S. So it's going to lead to a real question by the government. How do you regulate social media when it comes to manipulating news?
And those of our listeners who may not be familiar with the Post, they tend to be a little bit on the outrageous side, let's put it that way, when it comes to some of their news stories, harking back to the yellow journalism days of the turn of the century into the 20th century. Not to say that all their stories are that way, but some can be. So that probably therein lies the challenge for Twitter and for Facebook, based on that history. Let's finish off our segment, Steve, with Vietnam. And there's an article in the Straits Times today talking about, is Vietnam the next Asian miracle? And with COVID-19, Vietnam, of course, did very well controlling the virus. And now they are really pushing to upgrade infrastructure, to do a lot of different things to push Vietnam forward, while many other countries across Asia are struggling.
You know, and Vietnam has been a really positive story from an economic and investment perspective for a few years now. Because first of all, you look at Vietnam; it's a a large country. It's not the size of the U.S., China, or Indonesia, but it's a large country. It's got a growing middle class. It's got a very young population. So all the demographics are in Vietnam's favor. You couple this now with two dynamics. One, as you mentioned, how well they've handled COVID. And second, the U.S.-China trade war has forced a lot of companies to say, we need to, think about reshifting of our supply chain so that we're not just all in China. And Vietnam's been the largest beneficiary of that shifting of a supply chain. So everything is going in that regard into Vietnam's direction. But there's a couple of storm clouds on the horizon that businesses and investors need to be aware of, too.
Do you sense that this is Vietnam's been doing well for years. I mean, this is not a particularly new story, Vietnam rising, as it were. But because of the fact that they've handled COVID well, because of the fact that they have an economy that they can drive from the central government, does this give them a unique advantage that other countries don't have? Or are they just one of the additional countries here that has an opportunity to jump ahead?
Well, we all know what the BRICS countries are, right? Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Well, think of the VIP countries, Vietnam, Indonesia, Philippines, because they're all in that same category. They have large populations. They're younger populations. They have a growing domestic demand so that you can go to those countries and not only export, but also manufacture for the country, too. You can't do that, really, in a country, of course, the size of Singapore. But you could do that in one of the VIP countries. So they're not alone in that area. The government has managed this crisis much better, and they've also been able to attract that investment. Now, Indonesia and Philippines are trying to do that more now. We'll see if they can, keep up with Vietnam in that regard, though.
Very interesting. One of the great countries, and of course, we are now opening up links, air links again with Vietnam and Singapore. So, maybe the businesses and trade is going to start flowing again there soon. Steve Okun, always great to talk with you on our international news review. Thanks so much for being with us yet again on Money FM.
Thank you, GBZ.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.